Inigo Wilkins is a doctor in cultural studies at Goldsmith in London, and is going to publish his book Irreversible Noise, The Rationalization of Randomness and the Fetishization of Indeterminacy. We are really looking forward for it. And yeah, so I think you're also a member of Glassbeat, which is this research platform and journal. So okay, just I let you introduce your presentation.
Okay,
I don't remember the title.
Yeah, no, so the title is The Monetary Operating System and the Politics of the Price Process. So sorry for switching everyone to English now, but yeah, my French is not good enough to do a talk in French. But okay, so I just want to start by giving a kind of brief genealogical and functional description of money. So these are kind of points that there's a piece, I've given you an excerpt from my book in the dossier. So I'm just gonna recapitulate some of the main points there. So the genealogical description of money, you've got kind of two kind of basic strategies here. So one is to take money as arising from the interaction between self-interested individuals. So this is kind of a bottom-up description where money arises as a solution to the problem of exchange that increases its efficiency. And that's often put in kind of game theory, terms of game theory, and effectively you can think of it as a kind of naturalistic description of money, right, in terms of efficiency. So then the other kind of strategy is that money is imposed by social institutions, or it's an instituted function of such at the social level. So it, and that can either be via a state power or through emerging from the multitude. So people like Lourdes talk about this. So that then we can think of this as more or less a top-down kind of theory, and to do with the stability and control of a social system, and it's more to do with the normative side rather than the naturalistic side of explanation. So, as an example here, I mean, both of these strategies, though, of course, are overlapping, and you get different versions that bring each of them in together with each other. One of the good examples here to draw on is Nick Szabo. So he gives this account of money going back right to the origin of the species, effectively. So he's drawing on John Maynard Smith's proposal that genes evolve strategies that are Nash equilibria to problems of competition, and then Dawkins' suggestion that money is a formal token of delayed reciprocal altruism. So then his argument is that this is, you know, so delayed reciprocal altruism is not common in other animal species because of the cognitive constraints of keeping tabs on who owes what to who and so on, right? So it's a memory problem, effectively, right? And that basically his argument is that Homo sapiens kind of solved this problem by introducing kind of tokens, so what he calls collectibles, which are kind of shells or glass beads, that enabled a kind of accounting mechanism for these exchanges, right? So this is similar to a kind of theory which has become more popular recently, which is that money can be understood as serving as a form of memory, right? So money is a bookkeeping technology that allows for a decentralized economy, right? So it facilitates decentralized market of exchange. And an important aspect of that is the anonymity of money. Okay, so in, for example, in a barter situation, what you're exchanging is, you know, if somebody is exchanging carrots for beef, you know, it's their carrots and, you know, John's carrots and Emily's beef, you know, so the quality of those things are related to the persons who are exchanging. Whereas with money, it's anonymous. It's, you know, the money is doesn't have a connection to the person who's trading. Okay, so it's an informational mechanism that allows for transactions that would otherwise be plagued by uncertainty. And that's uncertainty in terms of that kind of, you know, both in terms of the quality of the exchange, but also in terms of the accounting process, right? So I think there are kind of two problems with these like naturalistic accounts of money. One is the failure to make necessary distinctions. So effectively something like Szabo's account there, he's conflating reciprocal gift giving with barter, so simple exchange, payment obligations with debt, and debt with money. So all of those different functions can be separately defined, and I think that it's necessary to. Also, then there's a failure to account for the normative aspects of political economy, so the structure of power. And that's based on a kind of fundamental presupposition of the individual acting in self-interest. So then, looking on the other side, the other leg of the strategy, then there's more or less two kinds of these who base the account of money on in a social institution. One which would be the charterist accounts. So charterists think that money is a creature of the state. So it's the state who provides money, and then they consider all kinds of money tokens before state coins, they'd consider as just primitive forms, right? The other strategy would be like money as an emergent property of collective desire. So that's related to this idea of the liquidity function of money. So money is the commodity that would be the most liquid good, right? The commodity that people want to exchange most and that will therefore serve as money. So, for example, you know, Fabian and Raphael's piece with the all of the animals there—they're all those animals that have functioned in terms of money, right? They're these commodity monies, effectively, right? And shells and glass beads and so on. And the problem is, so the explanation of money as the most liquid commodity hypostatizes money as a concrete thing, when rather the explanation should be it's an abstract system of socially instituted rules. Now, the issue here then is that seems like it's going to side on this kind of normative, you know, the social side, right? But I think what we need is something like a synthesis of those two aspects, right? So I'm kind of following here Wilfred Sellers' idea that we can understand human thinking as rational thinking as rule following, but as rule following that coordinates pattern governed activities. So this is a kind of stereoscopic synthesis of those normative and naturalistic dimensions that tries not to collapse them onto one another, right? So I think, for example, so Anna was talking about David Lewis's idea that norms arise from Nash equilibria of rational hypotheses and expectations, right? Then I think that goes some way to kind of understanding towards giving a kind of naturalistic understanding of norms, right? But in some ways, but effectively it collapses rule following behavior onto pattern governed inductions. So it doesn't account for the way in which norms are constructed and revised according to the intertwined elaboration of semantics and pragmatics. So including the whole multimodal spectrum of reason, which is deduction, induction, and abduction, and where semantics can be understood in terms of another game, the game of giving and asking for reasons, and pragmatics can be understood in terms of like, well, things like strikes, revolutions, new technologies, and so on, right? Also, I think it's useful here to draw on a kind of Simondonian explanation, so we can think of it of this in terms of a process of individuation. So the evolution of money is a process of individuation, social, technical, psychic individuation, in which there's a kind of in-group and an out-group, and that can be understood as a kind of machinic process, right? Also in Anna's essay, she was talking about machinic enslavement, Deleuzian idea. So machines are social before they're technical. So we've got this kind of machinic process of money that orders human relations. So money is very close in some ways to language, right? So just as Sellers gives a functional role account of language as a socially instituted rule-following procedure, money can be also understood according to the functional role it plays within a social system structured by norms. Against the hypostatization of money as a thing, all of those kind of forms of commodity money that you see, the beetle's legs and the salt and all of those things, they show us that money is something like a computational operating system, right? So the money is a formal token in a unit of account, in an accounting system, right? So the idea here is that we can define computation in terms of the medium independence of computational vehicles from the physical media that implement them. Okay, so we can compute using zeros and ones or any other kind of tokens that allow for the computation. So at a kind of basic level, all monetary machines receive requests for specific economic transfers and then compute them according to a set of rules and procedures, so algorithms, and provide us with a kind of validated monetary transactions, which are the settlement of balances. And these can be run on shells, metal coins, paper bills. That's a secondary concern relative to the algorithmic process.